All right, today is February 10th, it's 1:08 p.m. I'm Matthew Stickman, on the order of the town police officer of the Fireman System Board of Trustees. And this is my center secretary.
Doug Shively, board member.
Dave Griffin, board member.
Larry Cole, investment consultant.
Lee Diener, attorney.
Diane Riker, chief financial officer, ACM.
Dale Adams, plan administrator.
Thank you, Larry, board member.
Okay, thank you, Ray.
Also have Brandy.
Brandy Griffin, public.
Sadie Smith, attention.
The first item on the agenda is the minutes of the prior meeting. That's November 8th meeting.
I'll move to approve.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Second item on the agenda is the drop benefits for Walter Preston.
Ray, I apologize. I didn't email this to you, but it's drop benefits for Walter Presley. He elected to go into the drop on as of 10/31/13, which would be effective on 11/1. After 25 years of service, he elected a 20% lump sum with a 10-year certain life, 120 payment guaranteed. Lump sum amount is $115,642.55, and the monthly benefit is $3,547.20.
I move the board approve this.
Second. Dan and Mike, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. All right, at this time I'll ask if there's any public input or comments?
Nay.
No. Right. Next is the administrative agreement.
Normally, our administrative agreement, we would see only minor changes in it. We would see changes in the dollar amount, but apparently the city attorney has seen fit to make major changes in the document itself this year. And what you see in front of you is a package with apparently the agreement and a red line copy. And honestly, that's about all I know about it. I don't know if Diane or Sadie, if y'all want to address anything more about it.
Well, I guess things that I've been to the fire pension board and the general pension board as well, they had some interesting comments related to the administrative agreement as well. And I think we've agreed, if you would like to do so, Matt, that the chairmen should meet and go through it. They have still have some concerns about Alicia's salary, and they would like to still see us address that in this contract, step one. And then step two, they would like me to change. Sadie has a different position now than at the city. She's still doing the pension side of it. And although her salary at that, of the job she's doing is at a higher pay grade, which means she got an increase, we were not gonna pass that portion of the increase on to the pension board.
I can't hear what you're saying.
I'm so sorry, I can talk loud, I'm from the country. I just was trying to be polite every once in a while. The last thing, I was talking a little bit about the concerns that the fire board and the general board, who both had these on their board meetings, one was on Friday and one was on this morning, and neither one of them have approved their agreements either. And so we had some healthy discussion regarding it, And Mr. Griffith from the, from the Fire Pension Board is with us in the room, so we can continue that conversation. But those two boards have agreed that I would meet with the chairmen of the boards and try to iron out some of our concerns. And then as, Dale, as Dale mentioned, the red lines come from number 11 all the way down to number 28. And no, I have no specific advice on that, except that it was run through our city attorney. And from what I understand, it was ran through our city attorney last year, and this was not in there, but it's in there this year. So,
it would be good to have these before the day of the meeting.
Yes. I have no control over that, so I didn't know that that's how it was handed to you just today. So that's why both of the other boards have not adopted the administrative services agreement. So my recommendation would be that you could table it, and I could meet with the three chairmen and iron out Alicia's salary and other specific concerns that they might have. But I would recommend to you that you would look it through. If you had some specific concerns, you would bring it to our attention now.
So you're going to have the meeting with the board chairmen, then everybody's going to go back to the board in the next meeting and then vote on it.
Yes, if that works for you.
I'm all for tabling it.
Okay.
Is this an agreement that would only take us to the end of this current fiscal year?
It sure would. Would you like to see it last more than 1 year?
Well, it used to come up every year for revisiting, and we just saw minor changes, and I mean, this is a total rewrite. Lee, have you had a chance to look at this?
Just this morning, the general board authorized me to do that, and this board hadn't addressed that yet, but they've asked me to do it on their behalf, and probably do it on your behalf as well. I would recommend it.
That's why I'm going to suggest those major changes in the legal document. Maybe our attorney might want to look over it.
And I think it'd be a good idea, rather than have to revisit it again in May and revisit it again for next year at the August meeting, that it'd be a two-year agreement anyway.
Okay.
And instead of it's bad enough to have to revisit on an annual basis.
Well, then it's going to have to be rewritten again, right?
No, we don't want it to be. That's the goal. So,
I was saying, if they're going to make it 2 years, it's going to have to be rewritten again, or we're going to have this conversation again in November.
So you can make it more than that if you'd like. The only concern we have, if we make it a longer than 1 year agreement, is how do you want to address we divide the salaries, as you can see on Exhibit C. On the front page, you have the salaries the costs allocated based on number of plan participation. And that would have to be updated annually, that we could amend Schedule C annually and put that in the contract.
Dale, do you happen to have the figure from last year as to what we were paying? I mean, is this in line with that, or is it going up substantially?
No, the only thing that went up from last year was the $500 bonus. That's the only thing different between her pay last year.
So last year ours was $25,048. Is that sounding right?
$25,000.
Are you saying that
the total that we paid?
There's
a bonus for Sadie in there as well for $250.
Yeah, $250 for Sadie.
All right, so it's 24 or something.
Yes. And it would have been only, well, instead of the $750, you would take the $750
right,
times your 13%.
13% of that.
So it would be 13% of $750. Or thereabouts.
Now, I'm all for tabling this until they can have a meeting, and then somebody can come back with some good information from the meeting and from the attorney review.
The goal for our other board was to have a meeting within a month, and then we would let Lee review it after our meeting, so that we iron out some of our issues first and then give it to Lee. But we'll do whichever you think is best.
I'm available any day of the week, 8 to 5, so that's fine for me. Whatever's good with Randy and I.
Do you have any other concerns as a board on the other than lengthening the term?
Well, just get it to us where we can actually let read it before we walk in here and have to consider it.
Okay.
Dale, would you be willing to go to the meeting with Matt? Mm-hmm. You've got years of experience with these agreements. That's two heads of that.
I mean, honestly, you didn't get this like yesterday, right?
I've not been involved in it at all, so however.
But I'm saying somebody had it before. An hour ago, or something, and that's kind of my point. Alicia could have given this to Dale weeks ago, to where he could have sent it out to us. Because, like, I reviewed Larry's what he's gonna 2 weeks ago when he sent it to Dale. Dale sends it to the board members, and that's something I've noticed. Even with the emails that go out from the city to board members, they're only going to me and Matt. They're not going to him. They're not going to him. They're not going to Rick.
Oh, all right. We'll check on that. I don't know about that. Maybe six.
Well, I'll just say that on Wednesday last week, where Alicia sent it to the general board and said, you know, she had printed for them to come by. So I don't know if it was.
I never got anything. Or I would have come by.
Yeah, it didn't go out to our board.
I'll get your emails before you go, and then I'll make sure it's sent to you before.
I will check on that communication.
And do we need, Brandy, did you guys have any other concerns with the fire?
We had a lot of discussion about this general employees. A lot of it had to do with Alicia's wages and how do we want to pay them. Do we want to do pay grades with the city, or do we just want to use a flat amount? And do we want to do a comparison, look what other people in her position are making. And other cities and other
companies. Well, in last meeting, we had the big issue with we couldn't give her a raise because the city hadn't budgeted for it this year.
Right, we
could
next year's budget, yes.
That was the issue that we're not comfortable with.
And that is, we're paying for we should have the ability
to I agree completely.
Pay for what we want and it shouldn't be.
Unfortunately, if the city has a budget for it, I mean, we're still footing the bill.
Right.
It
has nothing, no effect on the city.
Right.
We had that issue came up as well. But a lot of it was to do with Alicia's wages and how, getting a competitive wage. And do we want to do it by numbers or by pay grades like that it's done in the past? So we'll work through all that and figure out, an option or two that we want to go forward with. And as far as the contract goes, it's 100%. All that red ink is 100% in the city's favor and 100% against us.
Right.
So I'm going to have it go to my lawyer as well. Between Lee and legal, I think we can come up with something that's a little more fair and equitable.
Everything that I read in the short perusing basically says she works 100% for the city and will do what the city wants done.
Right.
And I have a problem with that if I'm paying her salary.
So we don't have any say. The city has all the say. Yeah. We can't have a jury trial. So we're going to, we'll address all those issues before the board.
So do we need something giving Lee authority to go over that?
Do we need a motion for that?
Just direction is fine.
Got so directed.
Direction received.
I have some research that I had done, as he mentioned, on some salaries.
Okay.
So I have the pay grades that other places are paying.
Right.
Position. As far as the oversight situation, just so you all know, the contract reads that I have the oversight, and that only means that I'm kind of responsible for her coming and going. And from our other two board meetings, we don't feel that there's been any problem with Alicia's service to you. I mean, you could not have my staff, use her. You could pick somebody else outside of the organization if you chose to do that. But I'm glad you're using her, and I think it's been working well. If there's a problem, let me know.
Right, and I haven't noticed any problems, but I don't want to put her in the weird spot of having 18 different bosses and who are you going to answer to? And that's just a nightmare waiting to happen.
She does have four bosses, and she manages y'all very well, I think, except we're hearing a few things about emails right now, and we'll take care of that issue. And I think that, she definitely asked me for time off, but from what I understand, she's been reporting to all three of the directors the chairmans and letting them know as well. So we'll continue to work on this and make it a better document. So I'm sorry for the lateness of it. I had no control of it, but I'm sorry for it.
No, I understand that's your fault. It's just... Yeah.
It's frustrating.
You get something when you walk into a meeting and you're supposed to make a decision about, however many thousands of dollars it is.
Right. And when did you put your agenda out? What day did you put it out?
3 weeks ago.
Well, our agenda actually went out a week ago.
A week ago. Okay. So you would have needed the stuff by a week ago.
At least. It was emailed out, but...
And I don't know when we received it. Like she said, it went to the general board on Wednesday, so that would have been 4 days ago. So. But anyway, we will work on that. We also talked a little bit about audits this morning and how that Alicia helps us prepare our annual audit. That's one of the things she does. Now, if we didn't have Alicia and wasn't paid by the board, my staff would have to do that. And so she's part of my staff, so I can help monitor that. I don't know if you've ever had an independent audit done besides through the city's audit here on this board?
Yeah, we're the only one that ever
had. Fire, the only one that ever did. We talked a little bit about that this morning as well, that some boards will have their own independent audit, and we've all chosen to have it as one audit, which makes it definitely, in my view, it makes it definitely easier to monitor, and you get a fair audit. You know, I think they audit you as well as the city, so.
They do, and your economy is a scale by having it all done with one audit, as opposed to having somebody come in from scratch and auditing exactly the same.
Exactly.
The same figures, isn't it? I'd just like to add on this agreement, what prompted the agreement in the very beginning is because Alicia's predecessor was working for all three of the boards as well as a city staffer, and we developed the agreement so we could come up with duties and responsibilities of that particular position, and it has grown to the point where we've had to add a half-time person, which is the position Sadie's in right now, and then she transferred from her previous position in payroll over to budget, and I know that's where the pay increase came from, and but Alicia apparently still getting half of her time to help her with this, but
Yeah, I can explain a little about that if you'd like me to. Would you like me to explain that as well?
Yeah.
Are you good?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Oh, she was in payroll and pension, and then because she was doing so well in pension, we had a part-time position in the budget area, and so she wanted to move over to the budget side of it, but that was only a part-time position, so we wanted to leave the pension side with her as well, so she's still performing her pension duties and the half-time for budget. And so that's what caused the payroll increases, because that position she went to, but we did not pass that increase on to the board, because her pay grade was like an 18 where she was, and now she's on a higher pay grade, which has also caused some grief because it's a higher pay grade than what Alicia's pay grade is. She's not making more pay than Alicia makes, but her pay grade is a higher pay grade. So we're going to work on clarifying all this and getting it cleaned up.
Another question I'm not clear on, we talked about Alicia, you know, having several bosses with the pension. Now, Sadie works for the city 50% and for the pension 50% now. What kind of conflict? Is that a cause for conflict?
Well, she has more bosses than Alicia does. I mean, she has Alicia. She works for Alicia. Okay. She works for Cindy. They both work under me, but I don't really monitor their time. And then they work for Alicia. I mean, Sadie will work for the pension boards as well. So
how is her time getting spread? Yeah,
she gets dedicated time to work for this pension board?
Yes, 50-50.
Mm-hmm. Is it really 50-50? I mean,
We were doing like a weekly, and I've probably been doing more work with pension here recently than budget, because budget hasn't started amping up yet.
Right.
But Cindy has been very open that she understands there's going to be times where I'm doing more for pension than maybe budget and vice versa, but she hasn't been as, you know, cut and dry with it. Alicia, she has staff for me, and I just work through it. I mean, I think it's...
Is it going to be a problem when budget ramps up to where you're not going to be able to keep up with the pension side? I understand if it's 60-40 right now, it's going to go back to 60.
I don't think it's more than an issue, and the reason that being is because Alicia, this is something we had talked about prior to that, when it's budget's highs, it's kind of pension's lows and vice versa. So it has been sort of that way, but I mean, it hasn't been an issue as of yet, so.
If somebody wanted to audit it, how would they go about it? Do you mark, like, the difference on a timesheet? You know, if you're doing pension or doing...
No. When I was in payroll, it was a little more clear but then again, there were weeks in payroll where I may have done something for pension and, you know, that same. But, I mean, at this moment, it's not being, like, you know, penciled in every time, but if that's something that needs to be done, I mean...
No, I was just curious. I mean, if somebody came in there and said, made a public records request that I want to see this. I want to see if she works 2,080 hours in a year.
Right.
I want to see 1,040 and 1,040 show it to them on paper, because that could conceivably happen. Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunately, I guess that falls on you, because that's the ministerial duty portion of both of them.
Sure.
You know, and conversely, if you guys ever had Alicia do something outside of pension.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, it could be, somebody could make a problem about it.
Yeah. That is the reason that we discussed this morning, do you want to pay a set rate? for them to do the job. You know, you just want to pay the city a set rate, not give you all the calculations of her salary and everything. They both agreed that the way we've got it split, the way we're doing it now, is the best way. So, because we don't charge.
If you gave me a set rate, you still have to show me on paper where it's
going. Because we don't charge for the, you know, the desk and the phone and the, you know, all the other ancillary, you know, which that would be getting into way too much stuff. So we felt like it was a, or they felt like. As far as auditing the time, I mean, I could have her start recording it to be actual, but
I just threw that out there in the full what if category.
I think we're going to continue to monitor it closely because we definitely don't want it to be the wrong way.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm not saying I have a problem with it or anything, but I mean, anybody off the street could walk in there and demand, anybody that's in one of the plants could demand to see exactly how their money is being spent.
Exactly, but I guarantee you, I don't get Alicia for anything but pension because she doesn't have
time.
But that's a good point, and I appreciate it.
Well, I kind of see Sadie's position a little bit more difficult than Alicia's because Sadie actually has a city boss and a pension boss, so her kind of time is a little. Well, the lines are more difficult for the law that I see. So.
Well, I mean, I understand what he's saying, though. I mean, technically, I mean, I could have, you know, investments in different statistics that need to be put in the capper, and Alicia's a very good employee. I could walk into her office and say, Alicia, I need your help today because I have oversight over her. So I mean, that's what he's trying. I think that's the point you're trying to make, and I don't
take advantage of
the situation.
Yeah.
And don't worry.
I mean, I wouldn't want to. I don't, and I'm not saying anybody would.
Yes.
I'm just more
but it's good
from the standpoint of it's kind of something that you might want to think about because anybody could ask about it and anybody could make a great big production about it.
Yes.
I'm not saying, because I haven't seen a problem. I'm sure if Dale saw a problem, he would bring it to the board's attention.
I think I may ask them, say, to put on their calendar 6 hours pension, 2 hours budget, you know, from here on out, and just, we might. We'll see what we do. But it might make it clear. But anyway, yes, sir, I appreciate your concern.
I've talked to Alicia about that in the past, and there's been no indication there's been an issue, but
that satisfies me.
Okay.
All right. So we're tabling the agreement.
The other issue, the other thing that we're hoping is that Sadie's going to love this pension stuff so much because legal issues are now. She's a 25-year employee, and at one point she will be retired, and hopefully we'll have somebody to step in her shoes. It's my hope, anyway.
You're learning that stuff, right?
Yes, I'm learning.
Yes.
There's a lot to learn.
Oh, yeah, she's
learning. There's a lot to learn, a whole lot to know.
Nobody has anything else.
We need a motion to table that or just an agreement around the board?
No. Chairman can just lay it on the table.
It's on the table. All right. Well, it's your turn, sir.
All righty. Does anybody have a book?
Sure.
A PCA book? Yep. General, they're ready?
Yep.
Ray, you have a book in front of you?
No, I don't.
Alrighty. Well, Ray, I emailed it. Nancy said she, I think she may have printed it for you.
It's
the book from
Burgess Chambers.
Burgess Chambers.
No, I haven't.
When I spoke with Nancy last week, she said she had it. She'd printed out a bunch of stuff. I did email it to you.
I read the actuarial report.
Okay, I had also sent Larry's report to you as well.
I didn't see that.
Okay, what's his email address?
Anyway, go without it.
What's your, if you'd like, we could email it to you right now. I mean, it's a good report either way, but.
Hey, you don't need
to. Okay.
All right, well, I hope you're doing good, Ray.
Okay. I'm doing better.
Good. Look forward to getting you back here.
Same here, believe
me. I bet. Alrighty, this is the review as of 12/31. I'll give you a little update. It hasn't been very pretty since the end of that, but you might be a little surprised. We're not down as much as you might think, given what you see in the markets. A little bit more defensive than the equity market, obviously, with some of the things we've done. So not down too much. But if you'll turn to page 3, you can see the performance for the quarter. For the quarter ending 12/31, again, this is the first quarter of your fiscal year 2014. And it was off to a really good start, up $3.2 million. Market value at the end of the quarter was $57 million, $197,157. And that $3.2 million resulted in about a 6.1% return just for the quarter for net of investment management fees. The next column over on page 3, you can see for the 12 months for the year, the plan earned a little bit over $9 million, which was about 19.3%, which was right in line with the benchmark, which is actually pretty clear. I don't expect us to keep up in these strong bull markets like that, so that was a good year. At the policy review on page 4, I'll go through each of the individual managers here in just a second. There are no pages 4 and 5. There are no exceptions to the investment policy, or we got one labeled there, NA, that should be checked yes for the MLP portfolios. There were no violations there. It just, the footnote kind of explains why the wording is a little confusing there, but it should be marked yes. So no compliance issues. Page 6 is your asset allocation as of 12/31. You know, again, you can see the market value was $57,197,000. We've had a downturn in the stock market. You can see on this page, on page 6, it was 47.8% as of 12/31. We're down to about 45% right now. The overall plan is market value as of a couple days ago was $56,106,000. So it's down a little over $1 million. That's about 1.7%. So down about 1.7% this quarter, but up 6% first quarter. We're still well in positive territory in the fiscal year to date. And hopefully we can, and we'll see what happens between now and the end of the quarter. We're still very favorable towards equities relative to bonds. Although right now, if you shut the quarter off, bonds have actually done pretty well. Rates have come down a little bit more. And again, remember, if rates come down, market value of the bonds goes up.
What happened to the inflation?
Yeah, it's not there. The Fed's a little bit worried about deflation, and right now today you're seeing markets aren't doing too much today. They're down just a little bit, but everybody's kind of waiting for Yellen's first speech tomorrow at the Fed. So as new Fed chairman, she'll be speaking tomorrow, so markets are a little nervous, I guess, about what she's going to say. But bottom line is, I like the asset allocation we have now. What I am going to recommend, though, as you can see on the domestic equity, even you don't see the number I saw, but 45% about where we are now, that's still overweighted relative to the target. What I'd like to do is recommend that we move just a little bit, not much, but an additional $500,000 to convertibles, get a little bit more defensive, and move that convertibles a little closer to the 10% target. So we can come back to this at the end of my report, but it's going to be take $250,000 from Sawgrass Large Cap Growth and $250,000 from Westwood and move it into the convertibles.
Thing we've done with everything else.
Yeah, just kind of rebalancing, not making a huge bet here, but just taking some of it
off. What would that take us up to, convertibles?
Well, $500,000 is only not even 1%. Not quite even 1%, so it would take us 8.6.
Okay.
8.5, somewhere around there. You know, you'll notice real estate here is only showing 1.9%. That's actually at 3.7%. $1 million funded into the USB USB real estate
on
January 2nd, right after the end of the year. So, so that basically doubled your real estate investments at the beginning of the year. So that's where some of that equity has gone down, was that and the market. Okay. So you can see the managers then on page 7. As I said, the only thing that's been added on there since 12/31 is UBS. So you'll see that next report. Page 8, I don't usually cover this. I just wanted to point something out, though, because it ties in with page 9. But page 8, if you go back 5 years ago, you'll see the asset allocation was about 39% plus cash. It would have been almost, it was over 40% in fixed income and cash. So during the last few years, we've talked about how we weren't, especially the last couple of years, how we weren't too favorable on bonds and started taking that down even more. And you're down now to about 26% in bonds. So you can see the change. You can also see there's a couple more colors in there, adding the convertibles and the real estate. And now the MLPs, as you can see in the bar chart there. So this is the diversification we've been talking about. We took the fixed income down and recommended that you take the fixed income down, but we didn't want to take necessarily the risk associated with just moving that money into stocks. So you moved it into real estate, you moved it into convertibles, and you moved it into MLPs, all adding diversification and hopefully smoothing the ride going forward in the bumpy markets. The reason I point that out is if you then look at page 9, you can see that at least at this point it's had a very positive impact, because if you look over the last
Actually, if you even go to the last 3 years, you see fixed income returns are 3.5%, equity returns are 15.3%. Well, excuse me, equity returns are in double digits, depends on what you're looking at there. Don't have a total equity number. You can see any dollars that were moved out of fixed income into stocks did well. If you actually go to the two-year number, you can see Sawgrass fixed income was up 1.9% per year for the last 2 years. Anything we put into convertibles made 16.8% for the last 2 years, and if it was in stocks, it was even higher right above that, as you can see. So lowering that percentage has a huge impact, much more of an impact than any manager changes, quite frankly, is the asset allocation. And then this last year has worked out extremely well. You had a minus 1.5% bond return and everything else was 20 and above. So again, every dollar, that's real money. I was trying to do a little math here. I would say probably that asset allocation move has added somewhere between $1.5 to $2 million into the plan just by itself in the last 3 or 4 years. So that's worked out well. Won't always work out that well, but it's a long-term picture here, and that is to diversify,
try to smooth the ride, get you some low correlating assets, which help to again make it a little less bumpy going forward. But the returns, actually, if you go down to the total return line, 6.3% for the quarter. These are gross fees. 20% for the year. 16.4% per year for the last 2 years. 11.2% per year for the last three, and 12.3% now for the last 5 years. That's an annualized number. So a lot of people forget the fourth quarter of 2008. We all know 2008, your fiscal year, was ugly, but the fourth quarter of 2008 was very ugly. It's about minus 11%, I think, is what your plan did. So that rolled off of your five-year averages now. Fine. None too soon for us. I'm sure you feel the same way. Page 10 is are your returns and how you rank against other public pension funds around the country. You can see it looks like 21 is the lucky number here. It looks like you're in the top 21% for the quarter year in 2 years, top 15% for 3 years, still a little bit below average in the 57th percentile. 50 would be middle of the pack for the 5 years that had a couple managers that you replaced, as you remember, and those replacements worked out pretty well for the most part. We'll talk about that in a second. Your fiscal year returns are on page 11. If you go back to the last 10 years, I guess, going back to 2004. And you see the one that we wanted to get rid of there stands up pretty strong. And we're pretty good, like I said, 12 or 12% per year for the last 5 years, so things are looking up. The individual manager starting on page 12, and I'll go through these really quick, but if you want to stop and talk about anybody, let me know. Sawgrass, if you go to the middle of the page, you can see they had a 1095 quarter, a little better than their benchmark. Their last year, they're up 35% versus 33, and they rank in the top 37%. Five-year number's about average, but everything within that five-year period, they're doing a good job for you. Not only doing a good job, but doing it with a little less risk than the market. If you look at the beta over in that bottom section, you see beta, that's the risk they're taking relative to the market. Anything below one means they are less risky or less volatile than the market. And you can see in the 3 and 5 years, they're actually down to 83% of the market's volatility. So they've done a pretty good job for you. Westwood, still struggling a little bit, but I think for all the right reasons, I would still stay patient with them. We'll continue to keep a close eye on them, but they were up 30% for the year, but believe it or not, in that value universe, that was in the 76th percentile. That's still a strong absolute number. Just to remind you, too, kind of when you hired them, one of the more attractive features of their discipline and their long-term track record was their downside protection, how they really do protect your money when the market goes the other way. It hasn't done that since you hired them. So we got to see how they do in that market cycle. If they don't make up some ground then we could have an issue. But I'm still a fan of this firm. I like their discipline. I
met with them just about, I was out in Dallas probably about 6 months ago, I think it was, and kicked the tires. And still, we still have, and they've been into our office since then too. But we'll keep an eye on them. But
I think they'll be fine longer term. Frontier was the one on page 16, was the one who replaced Buckhead. A little over a couple years ago, and that's turned out to be a pretty good decision. Their one-year number was 40.18%, and believe it or not, that was just barely in the top third. So small cap value was a good place to have your money, but they did very well relative to the benchmark and relative to the peer group. In the last 2 years, they've averaged almost 33% per year and in the top 10% since you hired them. So that one worked out pretty well. Wish they'd all work out that well. Perimeter. I had some issues with them, did a site visit with them just a few months ago also, kicked the tires, and they ended up having a good year at 45%, versus 43 for the benchmark, and a good quarter up 9%, so they seem to be heading in the right direction. Obviously, we'll keep an eye on that. Good absolute numbers, that's for sure. And those two managers, really those two and Westwood, you've had them in nothing but a bull market, so let's see how they do in that, in protecting assets. Advent's done a good job for you in the convertible space, although it ranks kind of average. That convertible universe is a little bit misleading. We just don't have anything better, but there's a, it includes all levels of quality and all types of securities that you wouldn't own. So when poor, low-quality stuff is doing well, they're not going to look as good because you don't own it. But you can see good absolute returns also, a little bit below that benchmark, but still, it's not exactly apples to apples, but that convertible world is a little bit different. But the asset class and the space has done exactly what we want to. As I pointed out earlier, relative to bonds, it's made you a lot of money, and they are a hybrid instrument. Euro Pacific had a good quarter, up 7.8. One of the things I am going to do next time we do, I don't think it needs to be a special move, but they're being compared against the EFI index. I don't know if I talked about this last quarter or not, but they're being compared against the EFI. That EFI index is kind of the most common, and we've had it there for years, but the EFI index doesn't have any emerging markets in it. No Brazil, China, Russia, and so what we'll probably do the next time, there is an index called the All Country World Index XUS, which is a much more apples to apples kind of a benchmark. We'll probably change that. Emerging markets got hammered for the most part for the year. Actually, Euro Pacific held up pretty well considering they own about 30% in emerging markets, between 20 and 30%. So they actually did pretty well. Their 5-year number's still good. We just had them, they just came through in our office just last week. Normally we just get a sales rep when they come through, but they actually had one of the portfolio guys in for the conference at Barron's down in Orlando, a Barron's conference, and spent quite a bit of time with him. There's 10 portfolio management teams run this. It's a 51 basis points is your fee. It's a great fund, got a great long-term track record, and we think it's a great place to play in the international space. So you'll be good. American Realty, you've now had them, this kind of shocked me, but you've had them over a year now. I'm like, we just did this. But over a year, 1237, a little bit below the benchmark there, but a good absolute return again. Talking about diversifying fixed income out of that, which gave you nothing for the year, and real estate gave you 12%. And then Sawgrass bonds, this is why you didn't want to own a whole lot of bonds in the last year, down 1.53%, a little bit below the benchmark even. At a good quarter relative to the benchmark, but a year a little bit below. There's just not a lot of places, and the spread in the fixed income world is pretty tight between the best and the worst. So no real concerns there. Their 5-year number is still ahead of the benchmark. Just not a lot to be had in the bond world right now. Now, we did make a change, if you remember, to allow David Turfine to shorten the maturities if and when he sees fit, so we'll see how that shakes out over time. So I can really stop there or go on, but that's really it. We had a good year, good quarter. We're losing a little bit of money this quarter, but I don't know how everybody else is doing, but I think with our asset allocation line, we're probably holding up better than most.
Mario, what's your opinion on why the small caps are doing so well?
Well, they did extremely well because there was a real risk-on trade in the market, and if you've heard that term used, it's just that people, the short answer to your question is because bond rates are so low, and people aren't going to invest in bonds, so they got a lot of cash, and they're willing to take a lot more risk, so they're going into and just pumping it into the stock market. And with the idea that things were starting to improve. So as soon as you see any evidence at all that the economy is starting to improve, it's normal to see small caps go better than the large cap, safer companies. So that's really what happened. They've had a great run. Will it continue? I would have to say, they may continue to do well, but history would tell you that it'll rotate over to the larger cap names.
Value.
Next. Value. Good chance value. Even Sawgrass growth is not a real aggressive growth portfolio. So, some of their names may do pretty well in that environment too. It's a little more of a high quality, pretty known entities, predictable earning streams, that sort of thing, and those tend to do well in the next phase of that cycle when money rotates out of the large cap. But from a valuation perspective, you could certainly make the argument that small caps are a little bit higher priced right now than large caps. But we still think the large cap stocks are very fairly valued relative to where interest rates are. They're selling about 15 times earning, which is about the 75-year average for stocks.
So you'd say, well, that means they're fairly, you know, it's average, but if you break that 15 times earnings or break those PEs down into different interest rate cycles, you know that low interest rate cycles, the market will support a higher price to earnings ratio in stocks. So to be at the 75-year average, but be at historical lows in interest rates, tells me that they're probably still 20-25% cheap from where they really ought to be. So see if the market agrees. So the only recommendation I have is just to tweak a little bit right now. We've got coming up in June and August, Dale's informed me we have some pretty major withdrawals coming out of the plan. So at the next meeting, we will have another meeting before all that hits. We'll probably have to be raising a little bit of cash, so we'll see where we go from there. But right now, the only recommendation I have is to let's just take a little bit off the table in the equities, and we're overweighted in large cap. We're actually overweighted in large cap, even though I think they might do well. We're still overweighted relative to the target.
And you wanted to move,
it into convertibles.
You wanted to move 508 to convertibles.
250 out of each, out of Westwood, 250 out of Sawgrass, and move it into Advent.
I make a motion to move 500,000 total, 250 each from Westwood and Sawgrass into Advent.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Motion passed.
Okay. Okay. Somebody inform me what large withdrawals we're going to have.
Four guys coming out of drop. About 1.8 million total.
Okay.
And June and August. So we'll have to be. I appreciate the heads up, by the way. That's good to know in advance, far in advance. So we'll. Well, the state contribution comes in when about August, doesn't it? Yeah. How much is that here? Do we
have 419 last year or something?
Yeah. About 400. Well, 413 is projected, estimated.
Do we have monthly? How much monthly do we have coming in?
Contribution in the flow?
Yeah, you get that.
Probably going up just a little bit.
Anything going on? I'm having trouble with the volume.
Yeah, you know, a little over 300,000 a month. But we'll take a look at it in May and decide where we want to go to get the money for what we need. But the only other issue I had was this Convergex thing. You have a recapture program with them, and they had a couple rogue traders get fired and fined and I don't know what else down in the Bahamas or Bermuda. Had nothing to do with your recapture program. Didn't impact you at all. So in case you heard that news, it does not have an impact on you all.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you, guys.
All right, next will be our report from Foster and Foster.
All right, does Matt. Appreciate you allowing me to show up a little bit late. I had a morning meeting down in the center of the state, so glad I was able to make it here. Get these passed out. Lima. Oh, along with the chef. Should have the reports all loaded up.
Do you give it help in using these pads?
Yeah, it should pop right up here. There you go.
Okay. Can we have one more? Oops.
Well, it is an apple, so the screen will break if you look at it wrong. But no, that's these covers come off all the time. They're just attached with magnets. Okay, so it should be loaded up to your evaluation report. We just PDF'd it. We got it emailed out last week, and we loaded up in here. These work out really well. It saves paper and. When I'm on the road for the entire week, it's good. You can have reports just electronically fly over me and show up on the iPads while I'm driving. So, well, the first page I'd like to jump to is page 5. And just a swipe screen if you're familiar with the apples at all. Just swipe it over to the right, and summary of report is the page that you want. So this is the usual page that we talk about the fund requirements each year. Two columns. I would like to just quickly review the left-hand column because this is the funding that you approved last year. As a reminder, we project funding requirements out. So the funding requirements for the current fiscal year were developed as of the 2012 valuation, and that's the report that we gave last year. because payroll and state monies change a little bit, we have to update the city's contribution slightly from year to year, and that update now is 37.3% of payroll. Okay, payroll has gone down a little bit since the last report. We don't count drop members. They're police officers and they're providing services, but for pension purposes, they're considered retired. So the active members in the plan decreased from 146 to 143, and payroll has decreased. Okay, that's gone down. So those two factors combined have yielded a slight increase in the expected city contribution. So whereas the current year is 37.3, if you look at the right-hand column on page 5, the projection for fiscal 14-15 is 39.55%.
Now, 2 years ago when we did the experience study, we revised that number down because Matt and I were showing you on paper how the raises weren't coming.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing this year.
Yep.
Nothing for anybody. Do we need to look at that number again?
Not yet. We don't want to change assumptions too frequently based on short-term experience.
Well, here's the problem. We've already gone past the contract, not got a raise, and then we haven't even sat down to the table to even negotiate a contract. Fire is 2 years behind on their negotiations. If this kind of goes true to form, we're going to be looking at this for a while.
Well, what's going to happen by maintaining the current assumption, which is around 5% or so, but pay increases come in at, say, 1% to 2%. What's going to happen is what happened this year, is that you generated an actuarial gain. Okay? You fell a little bit short on your 5-year smooth, but that answer is probably going to change over the next 3 to 4 years. You have some really solid returns that have yet to phase in. What happens here in percent of payroll funding is, even when you can generate actuarial gains and get debt paid down and get your funded ratio up, is if payroll shrinks because the department gets a little smaller and pay increases come in very, very low, the percent of payroll might actually stabilize, or some years actually go up a little bit, but on a dollar basis, I anticipate that the city's dollar requirement for this plan will not only be lower next year, it will continue to go lower probably the next 3 to 4 years. So for now, I say leave the salary assumption in there. What happens is we're just a year off. We project out at 5%. If you come back in the next year at 1, you generate an actuarial gain, and then the city's costs come down a little bit the following year. Every 5 years or so, we'll go through this exercise, and if we get a 5-year pattern of low salary increases, then we say, you know what, let's lower it again. But we should do that about every 5 years. No more frequently than that. Okay. So the good news, as I've already alluded to, is that you're still using a 5-year smooth. Most plans use a 4. So the news that many plans are getting, you're going to get just 1 year out, and that's your investment return, your 5-year smooth average. If you just get your 8% going forward, your 5-year smooth average is going to be between 9 and 11% the next 4 years. That's going to continue, and that combined with low salary increases, this plan's funded ratio is going to begin going up faster than expected. And the city's funding, I can't promise on a percent of payroll that it will go down, just because I don't know what payroll is going to be in the future, but on a dollar basis, the plan should be getting cheaper over the next 3 to 4 years.
Cool. We'll discuss it at the end, because I have a question that you and I have talked about before that I want to get your opinion as to what it would have done here.
Okay. Any questions so far? I just have a couple of other places in the report to go to that we can continue our discussion. Anything I can answer up front right now?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's go to the nice section of the report to talk about your favorable investment returns. It's in the trust fund. I'll find the page shortly. And that would be page 23. Oh, another source of good experience you had this last year is turnover. Maybe not good for the department. Remember, you know, officers leaving before they're vested.
No, there was a bunch of them that didn't want to leave.
But from a pension standpoint, it's favorable because they take their contributions out and the city's liability is no longer needed for their benefit, okay? Page 23 shows the 5 years that we calculate on a fiscal basis to come up with a 7.4 five-year average. So next year at this time, we're going to lose that minus 0.39 from 09 and hopefully replace it with the assumption of 8. So you can, you know, you don't have to do any math really. You replace an 8 with basically a 0. You're going to improve. The five-year average should be about 9.2. If we just continue this going forward, so the following year after that, roll off the 7.4 and replace it with an 8, your five-year average is a 9.3. And then the year after that, it jumps up to 11.1 when you lose the negative from 11. And the following year, it's still 9.1. So you have buffer here. Even if you don't exactly hit the 8% the next couple of years for whatever reason, you've got a buffer from a 12 and 13. If you look at the two returns combined in 12 and 13, that's over 32% return total in 2 years' time. We had expected about 17% return. So these are still phasing in. So I'm optimistic that what's happening really around the state is going to be happening with your plan is a reversal of the costs going up and the funded ratios going down. We're seeing costs going down and funded ratios going up. So, good news I'm optimistic about, okay? All right, so I think I've covered most of the main points here. Your estimated funding requirements, projection out for a couple of years on salaries and investment, and an update on your funded ratio. So what questions can I answer at this point?
I know you and I talked a while back, and you did some really, really quick figures about what we would have been saving as a percent of payroll had the upfront funding been considered by the city, by the many people that it's been discussed with, but apparently not even wanting to be considered. And I don't think we've ever discussed this with you, ma'am. I know it was discussed with, I know Cindy was well aware of it. I know I had multiple discussions, I believe Randy had multiple discussions with Mr.
I've also brought up to all the councilmen.
And it's been talked about. And I know there was a real quick figure given to me last year at the pension conference that it had this going into effect that October 1, 2011, 12, now 13, it would have been in the neighborhood of 18% per plan. That's what I was told. Now, can you...
Are you talking about the city basically putting all of its obligation in right at the beginning of the fiscal year?
Yes. The upfront funding and what their savings would have been as a percentage of payroll, the quick figure that I got was around 6%.
Yeah,
that was just a guess.
It simply comes down to just that you would save an interest charge. You know, just like anything else, you make payments on. If you make payments over time, you get charged interest. So if the city's able to put in a lump sum of money in early October, the entire amount, you know, the... going back here, so the estimate right now is, you know, 39.5% of payroll for the next fiscal year. Okay? That assumes money's coming throughout the year. So the question is, what would that 39.5% be if the city could put in everything in early October? And that answer, it's about 2% of payroll less based on this valuation. So instead of it being 39.5, it'd be about 37.5.
How would that have changed it if they had been...
That's a 5% reduction in the city's funding. Not 5% of payroll, but it's a 5% decrease.
$2.5 million times 5%, would that be right?
We've got payroll here at about $8.3 million projected. So the city could save about $160,000 or so.
Well, my point being is that the city could have been saving this in all three plans for 3 years now.
I spoke to Cindy about that at our meeting last week, and what she said was that she did look into it, but the city doesn't have the money to do all three plans at the beginning of the year. So if you can't do all three plans, it's not fair to do one plan.
debt service funds.
The other thing I would like to say about that, that's a good point. The only thing is, if we had done it in September of 2008, just before the market crashed, you would have lost all that money as well. You know, putting the money in and then, you know, you lost all the money.
Yeah, long term, it gives you the same answer.
I think it's up and down.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's nice to process it with every payroll. It just seems like it's practical because of a cash flow issue. Do we pay an employee at the beginning of a year and say, okay, I'm going to pay you once a year?
Okay, but one of the things that was brought up, and I realize you weren't here for a lot of the start of the general plan discussion, was the boards don't do anything to try and save the city money. The boards don't do anything. We've brought stuff to the city.
Right, right.
So I don't like hearing that the boards aren't doing anything to try and save it. We did the experience study, not the city. We did it. We saved 5% of payroll right there by changing assumptions. We brought this forward, and it could have saved, okay, if it's 6%, that if it had been done for all three plans, that's 18% of payroll over the last 3 years. I'm just saying, we are trying to do things, both investment strategy-wise, holding down cost-wise, and with things such as this, to try and make things easier for the city, and I want the city to realize that, and unfortunately, you're the representative that sits here, so you get to hear it.
That's okay. I don't know.
I asked Mr. Leahy 9 times about this and could not get an answer.
Yeah, well, that is what sorry, I keep forgetting your name. I'm so sorry. It must be old age. That is a very good point, and then my cash flow issue is a very good point, but what you're saying is I could save 2% of payroll, which is $100,000, which is huge. How many plans across the state would you say pay annually? I think they pay quarterly, but I don't know that people pay annually.
The requirement is at least quarterly. A few do it at the beginning of the year. And we've had more requests to at least study it.
Yes.
Because the word's gotten out.
Mm-hmm.
But not a lot are doing it yet. The ad valorem comes in November. And
yeah.
So we have some plans that will try to put it in November, December.
Uh-huh.
And so we can give them a small interest charge. But most are still doing it either per payroll or per quarter.
Okay. All right. And then the other question I would have is, if you say 39% of payroll or 37% of payroll, how does that help us at the end of the year? Will we have to do a true-up calculation?
Well, actually, for police plan, the answer is actually no for police because you have a credit for funding standard account.
I have a what?
The funding standard account, that credit that we reconcile each year.
Yes, okay.
And that's $300,000.
Okay.
So we won't have to do a true-up. We'll just give and take from that.
Okay. And where do you think this needs to go from here if the city would select to do that? How would you expect that? I mean, I don't feel like it's my decision to make that.
If the city decides to do that, then the way for you to formally get that savings is for us to revise the report to take the interest charge out.
Okay.
And that would take a board decision because that's a method. That would be a method change.
Okay.
And so the board would have to formally approve
the interest calculation out, and you're not talking about interest earnings, you're talking about interest
expense.
It's
the charge, the load, yeah, the expense.
Okay. All right. And the interest charge is because we don't pay in advance?
Correct.
Okay.
Because it comes in throughout the year. So because we know it comes in evenly throughout the year,
mm-hmm.
we give you a half of year's charge on the investment assumption of 8. So there's a 4% interest charge on the contribution requirements.
It would basically be dollar cost averaging, just like every one of us does in our ICMA accounts. I mean, it's the same premise, right?
But,
it's analogous,
in your ICMA account, the government says you can contribute $17,500 annually. Do you put all that in your ICMA at one time? Sure, you could earn better interest if you put it all in at once, but your check doesn't allow you to put it all in at once.
Well, if the city wanted to pay me once on October 1st, yeah, I could do that.
See, I mean, it all goes round
but
and round.
But you're also talking about a city that's doubled its reserve in 5 years.
Answer to that. Okay. So you need the board to make that decision?
It's the city and the board would have to be on the same page here.
We can't do that. That would have to be also negotiated, I'm sure, with the union as part of the contract to do how they fund it, right?
No. I don't think that's
it's got to be a board decision.
That would be a board decision.
Because Doug said it's a
So it would have to be changed by the board, and the city would...
And the city would be agreeable to do it.
Right.
But the city would have, what kind of authorization would you need from the city is what I'm saying. I don't think I have that authority.
No, okay.
I'm sure somebody at the city would have to agree to pay a lump sum. I'm sure it would have to be a council.
Then the board would adopt it. Right. If the city would agree that that's how they wanted to pay it, then it would be up to the board to change that.
That would be like an ordinance addendum, right?
So thinking forward past if this decision saying where the city first confirms, yes, they plan to do it, and then the board, and then you make an action based on that.
You would just do it by motion.
If in the future we find out that the city actually came up short and they started reverting back to later in the year, we would need to know that. That's something that wouldn't automatically be known to us. And we would have to debit that against your credit balance each year. So I'm not trying to get too far down the road, but this is an agreement. It's not, if you go forward with this and it becomes an agreement, we'll need to be apprised going forward from some source that the contributions are coming in at the beginning of the fiscal year.
Is there somebody that's done this that both sides can maybe talk to get a little bit more information? I mean, that you could tell us, I mean, a city that's done it or
if they don't do it at the very beginning of, well, yes, I know one that plans to put it in November each year, and I just had a couple recently decide to do it at the beginning of the year. So yes, I've got a couple plans in mind. Yeah, Fort Myers Police, Delray Beach Police and Fire, Avon Park Police, Cocoa Beach, three pension plans decided to do it in November.
So
yeah, there's
enough. All right, so we could talk to and actually see what their experience has been and how it's worked out for everybody.
Yeah, and what, you know, what Cindy definitely said, I mean, we have 2.5 million here, 2.4 million. You know, you're putting in a different amount for fire. I think general's about 10 million. So you've got to put all that in at the same time. You'd have to do everybody fairly. You know, so that's a big, big amount going out in October for the city. So, but quarterly, would that help you?
Well, it's the same quarterly, it's the same answer.
That's right. Yeah, so that's the matter. So, well, we'll consider it and see, you know, where we go, but I don't know.
It's just it's nice to actually hear somebody say something.
Yeah.
For once. Because for 3 years, I've been bringing this up to various people in the city, and not one person's even entertained it, discussed it, answered the question. Okay, maybe the answer is no, but at least you're actually doing, saying something. Because I sent emails to other people and got no answer.
It seems like in this low, and you probably don't have to answer this, but it seems like in this low interest rate environment, it would be an even more appealing decision for the city to do that.
You're exactly right.
Because you're not earning a lot on your operating funds. You're not earning, you know.
But as I made the comment earlier, in the low interest rate environment, it is when we went negative and we would have put it in. Think of all the people that issued bonds.
Yeah, but see, I don't think that argument holds water. Okay. You can pick out any period where that happens, but if you're doing that, then you are stating that there is no time value to money, and there is a time value to money. So, and these are perpetual plans that have no maturity date. So the fact that you have one quarter where it wouldn't work out, I can show you for every one it didn't, five that did.
Right.
So over the long term, it's a plus. And again, in a low interest rate environment, it would seem, it would be a win-win for the city if the city has the money. If the city has the money sitting somewhere earning 1% or less in a money market fund and can save 5%,
you gotta get paid
the once a year to get the money to do it, but it certainly there is a time value of money.
But to answer your question, yes, I would do that. I would do exactly that, especially with the money I've made the last 3 years. I would absolutely.
Are you asking you that question? Okay. All right. Thank you.
Is that it, sir? Any other questions you have?
I did have one more for you. When you go to the page.
I've
got to leave the beach.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ray.
Thanks, Ray.
Have a good one. Okay.
All right, Ray.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you. Okay.
If you go to page 13, at the very bottom where he talks about the unfunded accrued liability, and you show method changes, actuarial losses, etc. Typically, all of these were calculated over a 30-year period. And I know the state put pressure on all plans to reduce the amount of time that we years remaining, you know, spread out over the useful life of the asset. And I noticed that, you know, on assumption changes, you're doing it over 20 years, but on the actuarial loss and gains, you're doing that over 10 years. Was there a decision at the board level, or, I mean, because not all actuaries do it this way. So.
Yeah, we brought to all our clients, after a meeting that the president of our firm and I attended with the folks in Tallahassee back in 2008, was to move away from 30 years on everything. And so we came up with, we'll call it the 10-20-30 plan. Gains and losses, which are measured every year, is 10. Assumptions and methods are 20, and benefit changes are 30. So it was a guidance from the state that we brought to our boards and passed that guidance along, and most of our clients have adopted that.
How have other actuaries across the state viewed that? Have you seen that been accepted by them as well, or do you know?
No idea.
Okay.
I haven't really talked to any other firms.
Okay. And overly, I think that's a better decision because you're buying down your mortgage quicker.
Well, as fast as the costs have come up when you're doing 10 years losses, they should come down pretty quickly when you're doing gains over 10 years. So that's our hope, is that the costs begin coming down more rapidly than they would have in the past.
And because of it, you have a slight uptick in your unfunded ratio. Your funded ratio?
Yes. So the funded ratio improved this last year from 65.8 to 68.4. In this environment, I anticipate about
3 percentage points a year. So at the end of about 4 years, we could be close to 80%. The gas fund ratio.
That's all. Thank you. I just wanted to make good comments so you don't know I don't always make bad comments.
All right. Well, anybody else have anything for Doug?
Do you need a motion to accept the actuarial report?
Yes, we do.
Nodding his head. So I move we accept the report.
Second. Hey. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Now, having done that, we need another motion for the board to determine total expected annual rate of return. The current year, the next several, and the long term. That will be based on Larry's recommendation, so I guess we'll have to wait until he gets back.
All right.
When he gets back, call you. It's at 8:30.
Yeah.
No, because the state of Florida, I can say no.
Weren't you part of that conversation?
Oh, yeah. I move we adopt the expected rate of return of 8%.
Do we need to wait for Larry to tell us 8%, or can we just assume that that's what he's going to say?
We could have him confirm that that's...
Yep.
We'll just hold on a second then.
I'm sure that's what he'll say.
Somebody second or dies. We wait for Larry.
We can go on. He can just say, yeah.
Yes. We voted.
I'll go with that. There was some information a while back that Diane had requested of you for the actuary that they've hired to study the pension plan.
Yes.
And has that work been done, or is it included in this report, or is there anything?
It's just a submission of data.
Okay.
So now that the report's approved, we have an analyst back in our office putting them together. So we'll get that out.
And is this the time to bring up billing on that?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Just from my own personal opinion, it should be billed directly to the city.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
We're happy to do that as long as the board's fine with it.
Can we go back and deal with that first and then that? Because I have some more questions on that.
Yep. The annual expected rate of return recommendation.
8%.
We thought you might recommend 8.5 or 9, but
12.
No, we're at 8, right? On the
we're at 8 and ready.
Yeah, we lowered it from 8.5 to 8, so 8%. This is my number.
I'll second. Doug and Mike. I'm sorry, Dan and Mike.
All favor? Time reserved, yeah.
Yeah, right. The motion passes at 8%.
All right, so the city is paying for this expense for the guy that they're hiring to basically fight with us, correct?
No, sir.
The city is paying to get the information from Foster and Foster.
Yes.
They requested.
It's a data request. What we use to do this report, we're being asked to turn it over to the city's actuary.
Yeah. And, I mean, everything's...
As long as those are run through this board, I have no problem with it. It's when people are going outside the board, talking to the people that we hire, and making requests of them, that I have a little bit of an issue. And I'm not trying to sound mean, but by statute, everybody that works for this board works.
That's our contract this way.
And I don't think we've had an issue with that. I think when the email went out, Doug emailed myself.
Well, we've had an issue with this ongoing for quite a while with people from the city, because this is like the third time that it's happened.
I'm not speaking of the city. I'm speaking of our
service providers.
The service providers. I guess what I'm trying to say is the point needs to be made that you're not going to do anything until we say do it.
Correct.
Because it's different people. It's not you in particular. It's been many people across the city have done the same thing. And every time, and it's like, why is this not getting through? Come to Matt Steckman or Dale Adams and tell them what you need. Contact the board, tell them what you need, and we'll get it for you.
And we did that.
Yes, we did.
We went about that.
Right. Fairly common issue, by the way.
Yeah.
Around the state.
Yes, it's perfect. The shade meeting is scheduled for February 17th. We'll get directions from the City Council on February 17th.
What meeting is that?
It's called the shade meeting. The City Council is going to meet to discuss pensions and where they want to go with it, but it's a shade meeting where they can meet out of the sunshine just to discuss. I don't know what they're going to say. I have no idea, honestly. I'm not even hiding what I know, so I don't know anything. So when we meet on the 17th, then we'll know a little bit more what they're expecting us to look at. They may look at different options, come to the board, and who knows?
What has the city paid Jim Rizzo and his people so far?
For police, nothing. We've not paid him anything at this point because we're just waiting on data at this point. And then we'll meet with them on, like I said, Monday, a week from today. So then we'll know. Unless you have recommendations, maybe you have some recommendations of what you want them to look at or not look at. I mean, I'll take those with me if you want me to give me that, but you just rather wait. I don't know what to say. I mean, I've been through this process before, so.
You mean what do we all want
need to do? We need to make a motion to have the actuary release the data? Or is that just?
I'd recommend we do that for the record, given the subject matter.
I move that Foster leaves the data requested by the city account. That will be paid for by the city. Okay, we can add that. That will be paid for by the city account.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Igor Collins Institute. Igor Collins Institute study.
Aye. If there's nothing else,
Igor Collins
or Doug. Lee, it is now your turn, sir.
Okay, legislative update. We have two bills. They're companion bills. One's in the Senate, one's in the House. Senate Bill 246. It's an appropriations in the Senate. It's passed two committees there. The House bill's been assigned to four committees there. It's essentially the bill that was last year, Senate Bill 458, sponsored by Jeremy Ring out of Margate. It was a bad bill last year, it's a bad bill this year. You may recall, essentially, it provides that if you're not 80% funded, if you have a funded ratio of 80%, which of course we don't, most plans don't, a certain percentage of your excess state monies have to go to increase that funded ratio and nothing else. And it's still this year, it's widely opposed, even by a lot of plan sponsors, cities and fire districts, because the thinking is it should be determined locally, not be mandated from Tallahassee. You know, it may be fine for some funds, but not for others. So that's it. And I do think we're going to see some other bills filed for consideration this session, which is March and April.
Why do they keep funding, or why do they keep sending forth these unfunded mandate bills that, I mean, this is what, year three for this?
Well, in the case, the real serious one was last year was Senate Bill 354, which did pass, unfortunately. Yeah. Doesn't go into effect for implementation until October 1 of this year. That will have significant additional administrative expense, primarily for actuarial calculations that need to be done, with no corresponding benefit to the fund whatsoever. And the reason for that bill, the proponents of that bill were those who were opposed to defined benefit plans and wanted to develop information, albeit it was irrelevant to its purpose, so that they could argue against the continued existence of defined benefit plans. So that's what that bill is all about. I'm hoping this session we'll see a bill introduced to appeal that. And also there had been discussion a couple months ago, as I told by one of the unions, they were going to oppose it judicially on constitutional grounds. Constitution provides that if legislation could have a negative impact on the city's ability to raise funds, then it would have to pass by 2/3 majority, and this bill didn't. So there's still legislatively, maybe judicially, still maybe get rid of that, because that's a real pain. Yeah. And the only other thing is a reminder for your financial disclosures, forms are available now. So you can file them anytime and in any event before July 1st.
They get mad if you come up there to try and get them before they want to mail them out.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You can go on file.
And have proof of filing. Because you continue to hear stories of them disappearing somehow or another.
And if you don't turn them in, say, like the month of July, you get a lot of fucking emails.
Do you have experience in that?
Well, you know, they don't start finding you until this day. So,
well, every year there's trustees that end up getting fined. And I think I told you the story last year about over the East Coast, big city, dispute between the pension trustee and one of the commissioners. And the commissioner looked at the filing the trustee found something inaccurate, and it ended up personally costing the trustee $38,000 in fines and attorney's fees.
Don't tell me after all this time.
Is that it, Mr. Demons? Does anybody else have any other matters to bring before the board?
Yes, he does.
We have apparently made an error in refunding a contribution to a former member. He was originally hired, Matthew Klinker, originally hired in 2006, was terminated in 2009, received a refund of $7,920.38. He was subsequently rehired in September of 2009. And then was terminated again in March of last year. And the computer system generated a total contribution amount to be refunded, which unfortunately included the original $7,900 that had been refunded. So we refunded him that full amount, and it actually is an overpayment of $7,920. We sent him a certified letter asking him to contact the lease's office about repayment, and I don't know if you have any idea if she turned back. Okay. And that was only sent last week, so I don't know if she's heard anything back from him. But anyway, I'm not sure where we need to proceed from here, give him an opportunity to repay it, because it's clearly an overpayment. And in fact, Doug's office uncovered this working on the valuation, and
that doesn't affect anything for me.
Such chunk change.
From a standpoint, it's not a blip on the radar.
Yeah.
No, but still, it's a serious issue, and I don't know who's not double checking things.
The concern that I've got is the city's computer system doesn't flag that to tell Alicia or whomever that they've already received a refund on it.
Okay, I'll look at it.
And I would think the city's system somewhere would have checks and balances that would tell it.
Wouldn't it show that break in continuity?
I don't know.
I don't know how, but
I'm going to find out for you.
I don't know how it totals it, because it shows all of his contributions from 06 to 09, and then his contributions from 09 to 2013, and it just gave a total, and that's what Alicia refunded.
How long ago was the check cut?
Last March.
All right.
I would venture to guess the former officer probably should have known it was an overpayment.
Definitely. He doesn't have it.
I would have thought, but...
Well, that was going to be my first question. I think he knew he was overpaid?
I can't imagine that he felt like he was entitled to that.
Yeah.
When he worked here for just under 3 years, he got $7,900, and then he came back from 09 to 2013, which was 3.5 years, he got $16,000. I mean, that would raise the flag.
I keep coming back.
But here's the problem. On the converse side, when he came back here, he was also making a lot more money because he got on SWAT and tons more overtime on call-outs and things like that. So I don't know if he would actually know.
He's
been seen around.
To our knowledge, yes, he's still here.
Okay, well, both as fiduciaries and pursuant to your plan, if there's an overpayment or an underpayment, your first step is to correct the mistake that was made. Under the ordinance, you have the authority to impose interest on the repayment that he owes back. And that's something that my recommendation would be is try to communicate with the guy and say, hey, this is what you owe us. And you may want to have a stipulation. If he pays by a certain time, you won't impose interest. If he takes over that, you will impose interest. That's typically how we can. We'd obviously like to avoid going to court because of the fund of money has been banned on these amounts of money. But typically, the interest that's imposed is the assumed rate, the actual assumed rate.
Which would be 8%.
8% in this case, yeah.
Do we know if we got the letter? Was it sent certified mail, or do you know?
It was sent certified, and I haven't spoken.
And what day was it sent?
I believe it was sent.
It was February 5th.
Oh, just recently.
The annual statements for
it. And do we impose interest back to the day we cut the check, or just from the day we notify him?
You know, I'd recommend if we can't communicate with the guy, and you may want to consider, as I mentioned, say, you know, if you pay it back by some date too distant future, we won't charge interest. But if not, we'll charge interest and we'll discuss.
What do you recommend for a time frame?
Well, I'm saying interest from here forward, or will we go back the whole year and add interest and then say we'll charge you that?
Well,
and I would give him 3 months to pay. But 12 months.
In the interest of the period of time, we were out the money by virtue of the overpayment.
Yes, okay.
Check that was paid directly to him. It was not.
Yeah, if it is something he did.
It was not.
I know he was a worker for a while.
It was terminated March 1st, and the check was
cut
by several weeks after that.
I mean, do you consider a year to be a decent time frame to pay back, or do you want it quicker than that?
Well, you often think pay back in installments.
Yes, if I charge him 8% interest, would a year be agreeable, or would you want to pay it longer?
Yeah.
If I have to negotiate that.
Yeah, I wouldn't even be opposed to longer. I mean, you have somebody that's
not got a job,
or at least not got a high-dollar job. You're asking them to pay back $7,000 or $8,000 in a year. That's a huge chunk of money for somebody that's living paycheck to paycheck or something. And it was our mistake, so there's no reason to to completely, you know, for lack of a better term, screw with him.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to a longer period of time if he's cooperating with us. If he's not, you know, then that's obviously a different issue. But if we can call him and he says, yeah, okay, I'll start making payments, work out a payment schedule of,
that's what I was gonna say.
Two, even 3 years. I mean, it took him 3 years to accrue that much, that kind of money. I wouldn't be opposed to a 3 year payback.
I agree.
Lee, what do you think our chances? So if they're 8% in court, though, what do you think? Well, we can prevail if he tries to fight it. I mean, can he?
Well, he's got title to the money. It's clearly not entitled to it, and the plan provides.
Yeah, it's clearly an overpayment. We paid him something we should not have paid him. I mean, clearly, it's not his money, but...
No, okay. You don't want to put the hardship on him.
Right.
And especially if he probably, if it was innocent on his part.
Yeah.
Well, that's like, there's been instances where people have gotten overpaid by small amounts of money over a year before it was found out, and then they want to take it back in one check, and it's like, yeah, no.
That's a situation.
Whoa.
Clearly, the mistakes need to be corrected. Now, the only way that an individual can use the benefit of a mistake is if they can successfully raise what's called an equitable estoppel before the board. And the elements of that is, number one, it was a mistake. Number two, that he could show that he did something he would not otherwise have done, but for the mistake, that he relied on the mistaken information, and he was damaged. Well, from what I've heard, it doesn't sound right. Like his termination had anything to do with what the amount of refund was going to be. That was after the fact.
Right.
If that's right.
Yeah, that's
right.
He
would not have a basis for an estoppel.
So do we need to set up a contract of some kind with him if he is amenable to paying it back at whatever it ends up being, $200 a month, $150 a month, whatever, does it need to be a contract between the board and him? So in other words, like, do you need to write it?
It should have it in writing, yeah. Either a written agreement or a promissory note.
We can write it as a one-page thing, or do we need to get you involved? We can do it.
No, we don't want an attorney to write two-page promissory note.
Do you want to pay? Do you want 3 months interest free and then start paying the interest, or do you want him never to pay interest over the 6 months?
My personal opinion would be if he enters an agreement and pays us back, and it's on time every time, maybe that there be if you drop behind on your payments.
Yeah,
interesting, but if he just starts and it's whatever everybody agrees to, $150 a month, and he pays it through until it's done, I would say let it go because it was our mistake.
I agree. If he stays up on his payments and doesn't become delinquent or whatever else, then I have no problem saying we'll eat the 8% on.
And if he
does, tell him it's like a credit card. You got it for this long. If you screw it up, then it's going to be interest back to day one.
If he misses that due date, then we can charge the 8% for that month. And then
if he misses the second one,
that's just start charging me.
Charge him on
every time from then on. Okay. Miss a payment, charge interest from then on.
Yeah, I agree.
And we're going to charge the interest back to the whole year, back to March 30th. Of 2013.
No, just from the day of the promissory note.
Okay.
More nice.
Yeah.
Charging 8% interest.
He tells us that's tax hand. Where do we go from there?
Court. But
civil court.
Civil. But then, you know, then we have the issue. We don't want to spend your money after that either.
Yeah, I mean, how much are we gonna? Not that I don't like you, Lee, but how much are we gonna pay you to go to? To get a $7,000, you know what I mean?
Well, we're going to pay him $1,000 just to file it and everything else.
Well, we'd get a local litigation guy to do that, but it would.
Right.
Could somebody,
you know, $7,000 to have to go to circuit court? I mean, it's in a small claim.
Right.
Dale, is this something we should work on, or is it something you want to work on?
Let me work with Alicia on it.
Okay.
One of us, Mike or Matt or I, will try to contact him. We'll see if first of you receive a letter.
Okay.
And then we can try to contact him and see what we can work out. I would think we could do it amicably without.
Yeah, because he'll be looking for a job somewhere else in town.
He, I,
He may be employed right now. I don't.
And he may be using y'all for a reference. And
no, I'm pretty sure he's employed, and I'm pretty sure I know who he's employed with. But yeah,
he's in the academy. Hmm? He's in the academy right now.
Is he?
But let us
correct
him. That he wasn't correct as recruits.
Usually these things be worked out with the discussion and an agreement. And
yeah.
It's. Yeah.
And that, you know, you realize if you stretch it out over 36 months, I mean, that's a long time to get your money back as well. But
I
wouldn't start with that. That's just me and my negotiating.
I understand.
But I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't want to cause a hardship on on him. I mean,
he had some other
stuff. It wasn't his fault that
leave us alive.
He got the money. Bill, don't get me wrong. He got the money, but it was our mistake. So I don't want to go and mess up his entire life by telling him he's got to pay us $500 or $600 a month.
It's amazing that the record system didn't show that was in
the
out.
I'll say for
you. I would like to address that. My issue is how we stop it going forward.
Right, I agree.
And I don't know if we have to, you know, have Alicia or whoever match it up with the latest state report, because our annual, our state report that we send in every year tells their life-to-date contributions.
That's a good point.
Or do we want to run it by the actuaries, you know, say before we do anything, it's might incur a little cost, but run it by the actuary and say this is what we're sending.
Right.
Whatever we can put in there to prevent it from happening again. It's my biggest concern is to stop it from happening in the future.
I agree.
Well, we're happy to do that. It's we came across this because we have an outstanding data entry person and the SF folks. We log in every year. The city gives us contributions for the members. We have it going back to forever. And if we see a rehire date, say, something consistent here. So we're happy to, if you want to use it.
Yeah, we'll do something to double check. I'll just double check the process. I'm assuming that Alicia is the one that cuts the checks and she just does all the refunds, or she did it through the
She does it and she notifies us what the refund is.
Do the requests for refunds come straight to her, or does it come through the board, through the chairman?
They usually go straight to her.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Most often when somebody terminates, you know, they have to contact human resources and they have to contact risk and they contact Alicia about final pays and things like that.
Okay.
And they tell us whether they want a refund or they want it rolled over or something. That's normally done through Alicia.
I think there's about 5 or 7 people that still haven't received their money. And if they've got 4 or 5 kids that we can't get a hold of, they're getting their money.
Oh, wow.
Just kind of quit and left it. We can't sign it.
Well, we've got the same thing. We've got accounts payable out there to people who've left and they're entitled to a refund of contributions and we've not paid them. Some of them are fairly old.
Mm.
And we've attempted to contact them and they've moved away.
At what point does it just stop?
It doesn't.
It stays there. So if they come back in 50 years, they're entitled to their $2,173 or whatever.
Yeah, well, and the problem is too, if it's less than $1,000, if we would just make a payment that wasn't requested or we made it mandatory, then we would have to open what's essentially an IRA in a bank and put it there. So that's why we require a written request from them. That avoids us having to do that.
And this isn't one of those unclaims that you send to the state as an unclaimed either. We keep it in the plan.
Yeah.
You keep it in the plan, but it doesn't do the plan any good because it's not your money.
But we are not.
I've got two other things. Our summary plan description was last written in November of 2011. It's supposed to be done every 2 years.
Already got that, yeah.
You got
a draft of that.
You're working on
the PA.
Okay.
Yep. Now, Ray is still on the board, correct?
Yes. And he informed me last week he felt like he's had a few setbacks and he was hoping to be able to be at today's meeting, but he's still got home health care and some other issues going on. But he still desires to be on the board. I don't know how long he can continue to to attend by telephone, but I know he still does want to continue to serve on the board.
Sharp mind. He's got a very sharp mind.
And the last thing I've got is we have a pending disability application for James Charles. We brought that up at the last meeting, and it was decided at that meeting you put a request in me to table, or to actually extend his due date for his hearing. It was a 90-day extension, I believe. And we were told at that time that he had not, there had been no contact with him in terms of him returning the interrogatories and so on. And I had not heard another word until about 2 weeks ago. I got an email from Stacy in your office telling me that there was a tentative hearing date scheduled and that he was going to an IME tomorrow.
Yes.
And normally we're kept up to date a little bit better on it. I've received nothing at all since last August on regarding this, other than what was discussed at the November meeting. And honestly, he has taken a job as a full-time coordinator at CF in the criminal justice program, and I thought maybe he had decided to drop his disability pursuit because of that. But I've had no contact from him, and then just out of the blue kind of contact from Stacy.
Normally what we do, Dale, when we get all the records in, then we send what we have to you, and also then set up an independent medical examination, send them to the IME physician, which is where we are right now. And then when the examination is done and we get that report back, then we have our initial hearings.
Well, then why is he demanding a hearing? Or why is there being this rush to do a hearing when he hasn't even seen the IME and you've got nothing in that back?
Can we get the IME results back by March 12th and get them distributed to the board?
I think we can, yeah. And under our rules, the furthest we could extend was an additional 90 days, which took us to that March 12th date.
Right.
Yeah,
when did he send the stuff to you? When did he send the stuff to you? I mean, because it doesn't appear that we're the ones dragging our feet here, but yet we've got to jump up and down.
Because there's the documents that I received last week from your office.
Yeah. I mean, Matt and I can be flexible.
Okay, we got his application July 8th, but we didn't get his interrogatories back until September. And once we get those, then we send out the records requests and we get all the records back. That's when we send the records here, get the IME set up. So he, you know, just for that initial period, there was 2 months where nothing happened.
Yeah, but I guess why haven't we heard anything from your office in the 2 months you had the stuff until last week when they got all the Dale? And it's like, because, I mean, he's got to arrange his schedule. He's got to take days off and everything so we can get this done. We need a little warning, I guess is what I'm saying.
I think we're doing fine.
I did speak to Alicia. She said she could get this done in a matter of a couple of days and put it on disk again. I just don't know if March 12th is too soon. I mean, that's 4 weeks from now.
Plus the IME report.
Plus we don't have the IME report.
That was my only concern, was just how quickly are we going to get that report from us?
And there's a lot of material here to digest. Well, I didn't even know it was even still moving forward.
Is it? And we've given him the 90-day extension. Are we only permitted to give one?
That's the one we can do on our own action now. We can contact him if that day's not going to work and just tell him it's not going to work, and just typically somebody would agree to just a later date.
Well, how long does the IME have to get
Because we're, I mean, what's the turnaround time on them? Are they like arbitrators? It's going to be up to 90 days?
No, usually it's within a couple weeks.
But I mean, we're talking about having a hearing basically 22 days from now.
Well, is there any liability of not meeting a March 12th deadline?
No, if we can't do it, then we just have to agree to a date.
Okay, so let's relax. Wait till you get the IMA report.
Second.
Say relax, but he's going to take a day off to be here.
So we're going to have a special meeting, yes, for this now?
It would be a special meeting.
He needs more than 4 days notice.
And I don't know what yours, I don't know what your schedule looks like.
Yeah,
I'm going to have to take off work to.
Yeah, I won't know until I get in the office with my schedule. We don't have enough data to set a date.
Right. And apparently the appointment he has for the IME is tomorrow with Dr. Vega in Tampa.
Yeah, but his counsel is trying to set this date for the 12th through Lee's office, correct?
Mm-hmm.
To pin us down, you know, and that's what I'm saying. We either need to say kind of yay, nay, or something, because
well,
it doesn't affect me. I can be here regardless. Matt works every day. He can be here regardless, but you're a businessman. You have a schedule. He works. He has to take a day off, and if Ray can get here.
Planning on scheduling, especially since I have an attorney, typically attorneys work with you on scheduling. I understand the
difficulties of that. So,
yes.
I can't say whether I can be here or not until I can look at my schedule, but I don't.
That's the point I'm kind of trying to get at.
Yeah, I think they should work on our schedule, not vice versa, but that's my opinion.
Well, why don't we get Vegas' report back and just get everybody work on getting some schedule.
Is this an orthopedic doctor that he's going to see, since it's a knee injury?
Yep.
Sounds great.
Because, I mean, he told me he had a 6% disability rating on his knee. That's what he had, and then we'll discuss that later. I've got an even higher disability rating than that. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Do you have anything else?
No, that's all I have.
So we're talking about waiting until Lee gets the data back, then having Lease or having Lee get with Dale and set a date. Is that what we're talking about?
When we get the report back, we'll contact, because we can't contact him directly since he's represented by an attorney. So we'll get with his attorney and everybody else and come up with a date.
Yeah, that sounds a lot better.
Anybody else? Have anything else? It is 2:54. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us.
Thank you.
And the second Monday in May is when we're going to meet.